the dark and low, the street
to the bright side of the road.
Cricket!
Channel Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Who Cares Wins on channelradio.co.uk. My name's Jan Mulligan, and with me in the studio today in Angela's place, keeping the seat warm for one more week,
I have
the lovely Kerry Hales.
It's me, I'm here, only for last week, and she's winging her way back.
She is, she's
Get
packing.
Get out of my seat, girl!
As we speak, she's packing, gathering all those gifts and souvenirs together, but she'll be back next Monday. But before then, we have yet another fascinating show to bring you. Our guest in the studio today is Robert Hissay, the Hypnotist Man.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you, Robert?
Very well, thank you.
He gave us a bit of a scare, folks.
Yeah, talk about keeping you on your toes, people.
But he's here with us. He's made it.
Busy this morning.
Well, that's good to know. Mm-hmm. Busy with clients, so we're going to find out a little bit more about your work as we go through the session. But I have some notes on you that you've kindly sent through and had a look at your website. So, Robert, you're into hypnotism, and that's performing shows and
on stage,
wedding events, that sort of thing.
Nightclubs and stuff.
You do hypnotherapy.
That's
really what we're going to be delving into today. So phobia, stress, stopping smoking, barriers to achievement, that sort of thing. And neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. So we've got all of that to come. But we always like to introduce our guests to our listeners by taking the guest back to early careers and what's brought you to today and what you do in your career today.
Okay.
And just before we do that, folks, if you can hear banging in the background, we do have builders in next door and they have been cementing and bricking and all sorts of things over the past few days. So if you hear the odd thunt,
it's not
us.
Thumping, Robert.
No, so apologise to listeners and to Robert before we start.
No.
So, Robert, the journey of your career to today.
The journey.
Who are you? Well, who are you, Robert? Who are
who
you? Tell us, share us, show us your belly. Who are you?
Well, first of all, my name is Robert Icy. I'm from South London, a place called Bermondsey. It's a lower working class area, quite a rough part of the world to grow up. And where I was from, there ain't much option for working class kids. You know, when I was brought up, if we'd done well at school, we'd have got bullied. It was that sort of, that's all my life. And everyone, well, I'd say 80% of the people, the only people you see with money when you're growing up are drug dealers or, you know, people into crime. You don't know any doctors or anyone who's sort of come out of the area because you're still in there. So, yeah, so I worked my way from a working class area into building work, etc., etc. Ended up in sales, to cut a story short. Ended up into sales working for a Flemish company. Then 5 years later, I got headhunted by a German company.
Can we ask what sort of sales?
Business to business sales.
Right.
So, you know, I've been used to working on building sites and other stuff while I was still studying. And I learned that, you know, I had enough of the building trauma to use my mind, so I got into sales anyway, and I found sales easy because being from the streets, I think you just actually you have to talk your way out of a lot of stuff. You know, it's just the way it is. And into places, I had nothing to lose, so you try more when you do come out of this area. So I got into sales and I've been really good at it, and I found it so easy driving around to places, having a cup of tea, talking about products, and it was a doddle for me from where I come from. They give me a nice Mercedes Benz and a good patio. You know,
very nice.
Couldn't believe how easy it was. All that time I'd been working hard. And so I carried on studying and got approached by a German manufacturing company called Weiner. And then I've worked for them for 5 years. And then the boss in Germany was a neuro-linguistic programmer, practitioner. And the way he ran the company was like I've never seen before. I never see him tell anyone off, like really lose his rag of anyone. Everyone had respect for their own job, and I was intrigued by what this man. How could he do this? He always seemed to be able to get through to people
without shouting
at all. Because when you did do something wrong, which I learned, he didn't see it as you're doing it wrong. There's no such thing as failure. It's what you learn in LP. It's only information. So what he'd do is he'd question you into why you've done it like that, and you know it'd be worse. He'd rather have a guy at you sometimes because you just you can see the patterns unfolding as he was questioning you into where you went wrong, where things was. And he was teaching you. That's what he was doing at the same time. He was just teaching you. You know, it's part of the process of bringing salespeople on in every sort of department of the company. So I was intrigued by him. I used to go out on sales calls with him. And just the thing that he could just interact with people and be so calm. And it don't matter if it was from the, you know, this guy's a CEO of a company which turns over 100 million a year, but he could talk to the, I don't know, the janitor to the CEO exactly the same. It just, you know, it would be no difference in how he'd treat people and how he would communicate. So that got me curious about it. Mm-hmm. And obviously, when I was growing up, I had dyslexia, small parts of dyslexia. And I went to the diploma course because I was missing the 20% of people in sales that were digital minded. So the people that like lots of detail. See, I'm a big picture person, and lots of sales guys are. Good sales guys are very big picture because they can paint these big images in your mind with words. But then you've got people, there is like 20% of people who are really digital. Who like to know detail. You know, I show them a brochure, they'd flick through all the books and look at the size of the nuts, bolts and brackets. And
he's talking to me.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm thinking, very detailed. This is Jan. We were having this conversation before you got here.
So this is the sort of the client I'd be missing. Because I'm thinking, what are you looking at? What am I looking at for? I couldn't understand in my map. You know, maps of the world, what I'll talk about later with NLP. Yeah. So basically, I wanted to do a little diploma course. I've done this diploma course in neurolinguistic programming with field learning in the Cotswolds. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then when I went in there, I sat right at the back of the class, you know, hated classroom, especially being a bit dyslexic. I used to feel inferior to anyone that spoke posh. Right. When I first got into sales, if I used to walk into someone that had a posh accent, I'd start going, hello, yes, my name is Robert. I've come, you know, I want it myself. So yeah. I couldn't even breathe properly, let alone talk properly, you know. So out of feeling this pressure of coming from a working class area and being dyslexic, it was a big weight on my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And anyway, one of the things we learned in NLP was a model from a guy called Robert Diltz in the States about why the good spellers, how can they spell? How can some people not spell? Mm-hmm. And why do some people spell? Mm-hmm. And then he showed us this technique, and he got two people sitting on two chairs. First of all, he got asked for the best spellers. Now, anyone's going to put their hand up in an NLP class, they're going to be pretty good. So he called them both up to the stage, and he said, spell miscellaneous or whatever the word may have been. So he spelled it on the board. One has done it all in capitals, one may have done it all in capital at the front, you know, the first letter, then whatever. So that was something we looked at first of all, and he got them to put it into sections, put a line through how you'd see that in sections.
Right.
So one may have put two lines, one may have only put one, or they may have put two in different places. Then he got him to show us where the image is in the mind. So he sort of stepped back, holding his hand up, and it was both of them was back on the back wall. And I'm sitting there, it was like watching a Darren Brown show. I'm thinking, what are they on about? I'm looking behind me, looking up and all thinking, what are they talking about? Because I'm dyslexic. I just see a big letter at a time in front of my face. I said, what are they talking about? See the word. I couldn't get my head grown out first of all. So anyway, I was looking up. Then he walks back, brings the word forward with his hand, and they both went at the same time. Oh, it's getting blurry. So I was thinking, it was unusual. Mm. So cut it short. No one would get up and do it, but I was dying to get up and do it. But I felt too ashamed of being dyslexic to get up. So after the course finished, he took me aside in one room and got me to spell procrastination. Wrote it down, cut it into three lines I put in it. And then what he does is he holds it up, he walks backwards. And he was going, where does it feel comfortable? What are you on about? And he walked forward and back again. And then all of a sudden, I started noticing, actually, I do feel more comfortable with it being there. So he stood on a chair, held it there for 3 minutes.
Right.
So the image was in a nice part of my mind. Stored the image into my mind for 3 minutes, just staring here. Took it away. I could spell it forwards and backwards, just like that.
Wow.
And it was, for me, it was a big moment. Like everyone who learns NLP has different shifts at different points.
Mm.
For me, that was like a big shift because I felt really happy. I thought, wow, is that it? You know, I've been told I'm stupid and thick, you know, and always all my life, and that's it. That's what I do. And they taught me how to look at a bit of paper, then visualise it up on the wall, and then I could remember words within 30 seconds after a while by practising how to spell words. And then I just didn't care anymore. I just didn't care about wanting to learn.
Freedom.
It wasn't that what was really bothering me. It was the hang-up of it all. The suggestion that I was silly, which is all about hypnosis, suggesting to myself that I was not as good as anyone else.
Right.
So once I got that, I got really happy at the first point. I was really happy. Then within a split second, I sort of got a bit tearful. I thought anger come in. Mm-hmm. How these people had treated you at school, the teachers, whatever. Yeah. And then that come out, and that was the big shift for me when I thought, fell in love with NLP. And there was much, much more from then, in that, just in the diploma course, it's just like a taster sort of course, that really made life-changing belief changes as well, value changes to me straight away.
Right.
So that's what really got me to learn NLP.
Initially, you went out of curiosity.
Just to learn about sales. I'm not going to lie. I wanted to manipulate people to make more money. That right. is the truth of it. I wanted to learn, why not get an extra 20% of people? I wanted to be the best salesman I could.
Yeah.
I could be anything I do in life, I try being the best at. You know, I can play guitar. I could get on stage with Eric Clapton and not mug myself off. I've played in single figures golf. But I have to enjoy, have a passion for something. And then I'll work really hard and to I'm the best as I can be.
Right.
And this is what happened with NLP as well.
So this really tweaked your interest and
yes, because
got going. What happened next?
What happened next from now?
From yeah,
I went into the practitioner course, then a master prac, then a trainer course, then studied extra hypnotherapy courses after that, because with neurolinguistic programming, you learn hypnotherapy, you learn Ericksonian hypnotherapy. Now Milton Erickson was the greatest hypnotherapist ever lived in my eyes. He was I think he was something like 4'2".
Right.
He was colourblind, tone deaf, used to wear purple suits, and he was like the weirdest man you've ever met, lived in the hills of California, so a little purple man in heels. But he was getting he'd be curing schizophrenic, this guy. You know, he was unbelievable. And he had a lot of these talents that he had and the skills that he'd be using, where he was tone deaf, he didn't really know himself what he was doing.
Right.
To the fine detail. And a guy called Richard Bandler and John Grindler, they modelled greatness. That's what NLP first was. It's modelling greatness. What do these, not people who are good at something, the elite, what were the people who are really good? Why is he getting near enough 100% success rate on schizophrenics or family counselling, whatever it was? Then why aren't the others? They only looked at the elite.
Mm-hmm.
There was a woman called Virginia Satir, who was a family counsellor, and she was very similar to the style from a German guy called Fritz Perls, who discovered Gestalt therapy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he went out to the States and brought that out there. And it was in what they were doing, it was similar, even though it was different, it was similar. And Robert Diltz has modelled that on NLP and equipped perceptual positions now, taking people out of people, putting them into other people and all this sort of stuff, just to get a dissociation. excuse me.
That's important.
Thank you. So I studied with Robert Diltz as well.
So while you were studying, were you still working in sales, or had
still working in sales? Yeah, still working in sales, still studying, still learning, using it in sales. My sales are going through the roof. But the more I was doing this, the more I wasn't interested in sales anymore.
Sure,
you know. Yeah. One thing the hypnotherapist. Do you want to go back to Milton Erickson? So this little guy who lived in the hills, he was tone deaf, colour blind, and Richard Bandler and John Grindler, who invented NLP, modelled these people.
Mm.
And Milton Erickson, I say he'd use his voice, he'd put you into trance with his voice. You didn't need to close your eyes. That's all myth. You don't need to have your eyes shut to be in hypnosis. So he'd have a real deep tone like, and now you may or you may not start to notice what there is to notice. And he'd use like long gaps in between words, which would then really have to make your unconscious mind listen. Now, two things happen there is you go into trance because the word's got so many gaps and your brain's got time to process it. And also what I've done is there I put in an embedded command. I just said the words, your mind. Now, you probably heard your unconscious mind, but I used your mind. And you put these little words, and you can put suggestions in with embedded commands. And this is what Erickson sort of found out. And, you know, I've studied a lot of Milton Ericksonian stuff, but it is an unusual thing to use on people. If a client come in for the first day to meet me, I don't think I'd go straight into the Ericksonian side of it as deeply, because it can freak some people out. So, you know... But I made my own model of hypnotherapy now, what I use anyway. It's the best. I was using the best of what I've learned from everyone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But so It's what NLP comes from, modelling greatness. They taught you, they give you the tools how to do that. Now, we've got our five senses. We've got a hearing, a seeing, a smell, a taste, and our feelings. Mm-hmm. And this is how we make a representation of the world. Everyone. This makes you different than me and others different from each other, because we all have our own experiences through our senses. So, for instance, I'll give you three examples of white flowers, how people can have examples majorly different. So if a woman's been attacked, mm-hmm. right, violently attacked in a field of white flowers, she's going to wake up the next day. The unconscious mind don't know what's real and what isn't real. So she sees the attacker through her eyes. When you see an image, when you see an image in your mind looking through your eyes, that's an associated image. So that can then attach to your feelings. So she'll see the attacker coming at her, the white flowers behind him, blah, 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 whatever. And it's going to make her feel really panicky. She's going to start crying again. It's basically as if it's happened again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it hasn't. It's not reality. It's just that your unconscious now has anchored that state. It doesn't know the difference between what's real and what isn't real. So your conscious mind thinks of it. Your unconscious sees it, and that's it. Then she's in a state of crying. And that go on for months and weeks. And, you know, you can see psychologists and NLP practitioners and, you know, until she's sort of got herself back to normal. And then many years later, say she gets married, she has children. Then years later again, she's a grandma now, she needs a hip replacement, for instance. And say that she's in hospital and a granddaughter brings in with her mum white flowers, big bunch of white flowers. Here you go, grandma.
Yeah.
And now she's going to have an association. She might not be scared like she used to. Maybe not make her cry mm-hmm. now, like it would have done back mm-hmm. in the day. But she gets the flowers and she's still going to, you know, it's not a nice association, them white flowers. It's going to yeah. associate that to this, one of the worst moments of her life. Mm-hmm. Now, someone else, say in the United States of America, there could be a girl of sweet 16 mm-hmm. and it's prom night. So the boyfriend comes around, his tuxedo, big limousine, mum and dad open the door. He's there, a big bunch of bouquet white flowers and loads. The serotonin levels are going through the roof now. You know, she's so happy. Mum and dad's there. She's so proud. She gets in the car, goes out, has a great time. Anyway, years pass by. She'll have her boyfriend's college, uni. She moves on as kids. Let's rush it forward to she's in hospital when she's a grandma and she's having a hip replacement and her grandchildren bring the white flowers in and serotonin's going to release. It's going to take her back to one of the best memories of her childhood,
yeah.
one of them crucial, wonderful points of being sweet 16 and serotonin's going to release. She's going to love them flowers. Now, me, I don't care about white flowers. I could give that green or yellow. I've got no association to white flowers. So I don't know about you. So can you see, that's just flowers yeah. now. Mm-hmm. We don't think about that. And like with you guys, with songs, I mean, you play music all day. I used to be in bands myself. I love music. But if I think of a song, it always takes me back. I was 22 years old. I was on a bar dancing in Corfu, and that song, A Little Bit of Monica in My Life, yep. they were like, Mambo number 5. Well, that come out. So whenever I never bought that song, and I think, but whenever I'm driving, that could be a year, 2 years, that song comes on.
Mm.
For some reason, that takes me back to that holiday. I can sort of even smell the summer smell in the air. I can see it. I get a split second and I start smiling. I can feel the serotonin releasing. And it don't matter when that song comes on, I get that. So, yeah. And most of us have songs somewhere that associate to good or bad things. Maybe someone's funeral, it could be, you know, meeting your first boyfriend or the night you got engaged or anything, mm-hmm. you know, it could be anything. So these are just how some of the senses work. And this goes on and on and on to touch, feelings and sand, smells and everything.
Well, you've given us a brilliant link to our first piece of music because he didn't know. But it's obviously the hypnotism, bit of psychic reading maybe going on here, but I don't know. We're going to play now Tears for Fears.
Yeah, not Mambo number 5.
No.
But find God a way to find
so
that.
We've got some play on words here. So it's Tears for Fears because something we're going to be talking about is phobias. So there's the in-joke there. But it's Everybody Wants to Rule the World, which also is aligned to Robert and your work with sportsmen and achieving their goals and overcome barriers. But also, for those of you old enough to know, the first sports relief that took place.
Old enough? It wasn't that long ago, Jan.
Well, if you're under 10, you won't know it.
10. For our under 10 listeners.
Here's the history lesson.
You should be at school.
But it was the song of the first sports relief, and I was out there doing my sponsored tennis for 10 hours that year.
Wow.
Not done so much this year, but for everybody who took part in any fundraising for sports relief this weekend, this song is for you.
Thank you. Channel Radio.
Memories. Tennis court. Hours on end.
How many years ago was this, Jen?
It's in the 80s, wasn't it?
Was it?
Yeah. Gotta be, because it was Live Aid. It was the year after Live Aid. So that was 85.
So we're talking about the first sports one.
Yeah, Sports Relief followed Live Aid, so it's been about 86, 87 at the utmost, but I think it was 86. Mm. So it's a good few years now.
Yeah. Let's move on. We're not old.
We're not old. It's only yesterday.
Welcome
back to Who Cares Wins. I'm Jan Mulligan with Kerry Hales and our guest today, Robert Hissey. Robert, before we took the break, you were giving us your background, how you got interested in NLP, and we touched on how it's linked to hypnotherapy because you have to learn hypnotherapy. And that's now, am I saying, where a lot of your clients come from. They're looking for, or they're exploring whether hypnotherapy might be good for them to help them.
Yeah.
Can you give us a bit of background about what hypnotherapy is?
Hypnotherapy is changing. We're working with your unconscious mind. Same as NLP. NLP is basically like awake hypnosis. It's all we're still using dealing with the unconscious. When you deal with the unconscious mind, you can make change fast.
Right.
So as I say, when Bandler and Grinder looked at the hypnosis and the hypnotherapy and the great psychologists of the world, what they discovered is what was going on unconsciously. They didn't care about the content, which psychotherapy does. They wanted to know about the process, right, like a computer. Mm-hmm. What was the process? What was it going on using the senses with the images and feelings and linking it all together, seeing what the process was? And that's what we changed. We changed the machine. So if you think your conscious mind deals with 7 pieces of data a second, the world we live in, we eat, we feed, and we survive. The unconscious mind on the inside, the big powerful machine, deals with 10 billion pieces of data a second.
Wow.
So that's dealing with your nerve endings, the saliva in your mouth, water in your eyes, your vision, your chromosomes, your blood cells, your liver, your kidneys, your bowels, your toenails. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And that's without your thoughts, your memories, your values, and everything else it's holding in there for you. And it deals with all your stores, all your images. So it just goes on and on. So if you can change the unconscious mind using the feelings and the images, like you may have seen Paul McKenna on telly, I've studied with Paul, he's a massive NLP practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good, but there's, you know, it's not known over here like it is in the States. He's not as good as a lot of the guys that's in the States and other guys that invented it that have been there from day one. Paul McKenna now goes on tour with Bandler.
Mm-hmm.
All over the world. So I've studied with all them as well, and it all boils down to using the unconscious mind. It's for quick change, rapid change. This is what we do. You have to change the unconscious if you're going to do it consciously anyway, with the cognitive mind. So you can't change what's happened, but you can change the way you feel about things.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. So I'll get people come to me, say, with depression. Now, depression, I've had a lot of chats on Facebook about this, people get any ump when I made it sound a bit too big picture, too clear, too easy to just to say it's that. But
yeah.
Depression generally comes from not having nowhere to move forward from your problem. So you're stuck in whatever is making you depressed. So you're sort of living in the here and now and the past.
Mm-hmm.
There's no future vision from moving away from it. If they can't see a future vision from it, then they're stuck there. You keep going round and round, and you come back and you might feel okay for a day and you're looking forward and you've got nowhere to go. So generally what happens is you're back in the loop again, back looking backwards, looking about what happened, that makes you feel. And the more you practice that, the easier it is to bring that on, the quicker you get good at it. It's like anything you practice. And it's something we don't mean to do, obviously.
Becomes a good, bad habit.
It becomes a good, bad habit, yeah. And it's generally your unconscious mind trying to protect you, because everything we do has a positive intention. People do things with positive intention. Even if it's something negative, there's a positive intention behind what they're doing negative. People steal. People rob people's houses. Why? Because they can't afford to eat. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It may be people are on drugs and they rob someone, but their positive intention is they feel so bad that they need to get the money so they can feel okay. They can't bear the pain they're going through.
Right.
So there's a positive intention, even though it's a very bad thing to do. It's just a scummy thing to do. But, you know, this is the reality of it. Our mind's always working a positive intention. When you see people arguing, it's about ego normally comes out. And, you know, ego death holds us all back, you know. Ego death is a real big killer to people's lives, because what happens is we get scared of failure. And we're programmed at school, this is where you should be. This is where you should be. That's how you've got to do it. And you've got to do it that way academically. And if you don't, you're a failure. That's how we're all made to feel as we're kids straight away, as soon as we're born into the world. And it's been passed down and passed down. So our unconscious, our ego would then stop us from doing things. Well, don't even try that, because you tried it before and you look stupid. So don't do it again. And people won't try things, put themselves out there to make the change they want, because they're too scared of failure. It's like when I do my gastric band, diets don't work. Psychology behind diets don't work. It works when you're on them, you lose weight, you can lose stones. As soon as you come off that diet and you go back to reality, you blow up again, because it can't. You know, I was out a little while ago and I'm having a meal with some NLP friends, and a woman came in and she opened up one of these packets with some powder soup and poured it in kind of a hot bowl of water in a restaurant. I thought, who wants to live their life like that? Yeah, she will lose weight, but generally. If you look at the history of all diets, people generally end up bigger than they started.
Right.
And as soon as people take the first diet, then it just ends up, and then you feel like a failure because you failed the first time. So when you do the next one, you fail a bit easier because you think, oh, I failed before. You start seeing the signs a bit quicker. And then you're restricting the things that you love. Like, you might like a bit of chocolate. You know, there's times of the month when women need sugar levels. And well, it's not supposed to have any, you know. It makes you feel better, your sugar levels drop. Same as if men go out on the beer the next day, your sugar levels drop. The best thing you can have is sugar to make you feel better, because your sugar levels just drop so fast. So to say, no, you can never eat sugar, you can never have chocolate, and people put all this pressure on with diet, there's all this association to, it's so rigid, and without flexibility, nothing's going to stick. You know, when I used to work in manufacturing, you had flexible aluminium, drop-forged aluminium, which is flexible. You know, you can make planes out of it. It's one of the strongest fabrics in the world, because it's flexible. You put something rigid with a bit of pressure on it, it's going to snap and break.
Yeah.
You know, if you try walking out through that door with your arms open, no matter how hard you try, you're not going to get through until you break your arm or someone turns you to the side. So this is the same with change and dieting. You know, you've got to be flexible.
So you used a phrase there, gastric band hypnotherapy.
Yes.
What's that all about?
Gastric band hypnotherapy. It's where people can think, why have a real gastric band when you can think you've got one?
Right, so instead of having the surgery...
Instead of having the surgery, you can just think you've just had the surgery. And is that a suggestion?
Is thinking the same as imagining?
Thinking's the same as imagining, yeah. You can imagine. Okay. Imagination's what makes change. We're not taught to use our unconscious mind. We're actually taught to... the creativity in school, we're taught to destroy our creativity in school, our schooling system. It is that we are programmed to not be able to use our own creativity. We're told to do something this way. That's how it should be done, which it won't work for everyone, you know. Anyone can be a good drawer, but it don't mean they're all going to learn in the same direction, you know.
Right.
You can go... all over the map before you get back to where you want to be.
Without talking us through all the nitty-gritty and giving away your trade secrets.
Okay. And also you talked about depression. I'd quite like to hear about more about that.
We'll come back. I'm still intrigued. I'm thinking gastric band.
Gastric band, okay.
Okay, I can think that to the heart. My heart's content.
There's a lot.
There's obviously far more behind that.
Yes, so there's a lot more behind
that. What can you tease our listeners with? Anybody who thinks maybe this is something I should get in contact with Robert?
This is very popular, isn't it?
What I'm known for, which I'm quite famous for the industry for, is that I've got my own style of doing it.
Right.
There's a lot of people out there doing their own styles, but I like to use NLP with it. Mm-hmm. So I'm using a neuro-linguistic program, which allows me to generate information from you about you, and we make the change that you need. It's not I'm telling you what you should do. You know, because that don't work. If that goes against your values and beliefs, then you're going to go, "No, ain't happening." You're going to feel uncomfortable. It's not going to work. So I have to, with using NLP and hypnotherapy, the way that I've put my model together, it's all about you. We generate information from you to change. It's your experiences. It's your map of the world. We need to change, not mine.
Right.
So it's no good me saying to you, "Well, don't eat." You know, because we all know that anyway. So
because I think that it. I mean, you know, I'm a coach, and sort of one of the things that I you hear about sort of NLP is very sort of formulaic, you know, sort of, and by the nature of you saying, you know, it's very individual to you, and you finding out about that person. Yeah. So it isn't a case of you're not taking one person and going, well, okay, this is how I do it. These are the 10 steps I do the gastric banding, da 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 da. Because it is all for me. I mean, as a coach, it is all about what is magnificent to that person? What is weight loss to that person? It's like, otherwise you could be hypnotizing them to be a skinny person and they might not want to be.
No, that's right. That's exactly it. Mm. If that don't fit their map or where they want to go, then you could lose them straight away. You can lose the helping them altogether. And there's a lot of hypnotherapists out there who sit and read sheets, right? And this is what I really do not agree with, because it's not governed hypnotherapy. Only three states of America it's governed. So it's not governed anywhere else in the world. So you can go on these courses, people can go on these courses, and there's people at Arley Street, other people have been up there, and the kids are sitting there reading scripts. I mean, that proves that can only work. To me, it's going to work 40% of people, mm-hmm. yeah? Because really, you're only going for like the amount of the real suggestible people like you would on stage. So that's 20, it could be 20% to 40% of people, roughly. Mm. So that ain't good to me. I don't want that name. You know, I want a higher volume of success. And I do, you know, I'm known for my gastric bands, and that's people who keep coming back for me. It wasn't something I meant to take my business model into. That has been it's just what happened. Mm-hmm. It was just that.
You don't know what you're going to be known for.
You don't get as many people wanting to stop smoking as you think. You don't really get, I don't get as many clients as that.
Who knew that you were going to be the man, the fat bin man?
But excellent. And it's all these negative things we say to ourselves, the language we use and the commands we use and the patterns with weight loss. So what I'd use is with NLP, where I ever start the gastric band session would be obviously talking about them, telling them a lot of metaphors, teaching them stories about, I'd be telling it in story because it sinks in easier, but giving them information to take on a journey. So I'd be preparing them first, first part of it. And then we do some what I call NLP timeline. I normally like to go into this model. And with the timeline, like I sort of go back to where they put the weight on from, you know, like
right.
I had one, everyone's different. You know, some people cry, some people get really emotional. Mm-hmm. 'Cause once they change that, like I've had people come to me and a woman come to me for weight loss, and their mum passed away 15 years ago. And I took her back on this timeline, and she's put, and it turned out that's where it came from.
Right.
Mm. Consciously, she didn't realise it. She just slowly, she started not picking up the signals as we were going back. Before that, she felt great, didn't care about food, didn't even think about it. Then she put on weight, then she started dieting, then teaching her. And I say over time that the psychology behind diets teach you to put on weight over a long period of time, 5 years, whatever. So in the end, it turned out she was putting on like a stone a year on average. Wow. Mm-hmm. So, cut short, we've done using me timeline therapy and hypnosis. We took her back and we sorted out this. We had a look at it. Mm-hmm. I dissociated her from it. So when you dissociate for someone, it's taking them out of the image through their eyes so they can look at it. So we do some dissociating work. It allows you to take your feelings away from what happened.
Right.
And when you can take your feelings away, then you can get another outlook on it. But you ain't going to make change until you've dissociated their feelings from what you're going to work with. So they dissociate the image, and I'll get her then to educate herself. I say, what would you say to the younger you now, knowing where you've come from? So I get a lot of information at what she'd want, because she knows what she needs in her life. She knows what she needs to hear. She can look back and say, that's what I should have done. This is where I should have gone. I shouldn't have let that get me down. I should have kept my chin up, or whatever it may be. It don't matter what I think. Because it don't matter to me whatever she says, because I know it's right. Mm-hmm. You know, so she's come out of this crying, now she goes back in. So I finish off the timeline, I do some what they call future pacing work. I don't want to go into too long-winded about it. Take her into the future, take her back. By the end of it, she's got the biggest smile on her face. She's like raring to go into the next stage of the hypnotherapy. And this happens with everyone. And I love it. Like now, when I started, I'm a big feeling person. When I first started learning NLP, I see people cry, I just want to go and give them a cuddle, used to break me up. I'm happy. I'll get a cheeky little smile, I think. Because I know if someone's been that honest to themselves and honest to me, that they're opened up and they shed a little tear, and they don't expect that because they're coming for weight loss. Not everyone does.
No.
But when they do, I always feel good, because I know they're going to get more out of it. And this, I've really found
a route there. Yeah.
And once that's changed,
the sinister side of being a coach and as a different people. It's just like when people cry, it's a really good feeling, because it's just like, you know, that there's a shift, there's trust there. It's just
and then when they come out of it and they have the gastric band, what by changing that problem ain't just about the weight loss. The weight loss is great for them, but now they've let go of this stuff that's been holding them back, stopping them from being happy, stopping them from making decisions, and you know it affects so many different parts of their life they didn't realise. All of a sudden they're flying again, and then and I've had people who can't come out the house for 15 years as well, same sort of thing. A lovely lady last year, I had a gastric band with a sister. About 6 months later, it took her to get the courage to come to me. She actually did come to my house, so it was a big, brave step, but she couldn't handle it no more. This time last year, Easter, she said, I was looking out the window, I had 2 weeks off holiday, off work. She could drive to work a certain route and drive back. And over these years, when they put, like, you know, it might have been a diversion for a few weeks, she said it was a cause of anxiety, panic, she'd be crying.
Right.
But she'd still get to work and back. She managed to do that, and she could go to the bottom of the block and get a pint of milk, and but that'd still worry her. Anyway, so she came to me. Done some work with her. Now she's going on holiday all the time. It's like Blue Water, you know. But again, you know, there was a lot of tears that when we went back. But it was to me, that's that is the passion for me doing this job, to help people. And I come from a working class area, and this is why I do it now. I want to go back in the end. I want to make my name, and I want to go back and help the working class children to show their vision that there is life. It is possible. You can move on and do whatever you want in life. It's just that they don't get shown it.
No, you know? No. Well, we'll explore that a little bit more in a moment. We'll have another piece of music. Slightly inappropriate, but slightly appropriate. It's Queen and Fat Bottom Girls. For all the Fat Bottom Girls that want to be fat, that's fine.
This is the man that will make
But if you
think.
Don't want to be fat, then Robert's your man. We'll be back after this.
Oh, you're gonna take me home tonight. Oh, beside that red firelight. Oh, you're gonna let it all hang out. Fat bottom girls, you make the rocking world go round.
Hey! I was just a skinny lad. Never knew no good from bad. But I knew life before. Been singing with my band, cross the water, cross the land. I've seen every blue-eyed floozy on the way. Hey. But their beauty and their style were kind of smooth after a while. Take me to their bloody ladies every time. Come on!
Oh, won't you take me home? Beauty queens of this locality.
Channel Radio.
Welcome back to Who Cares Wins. So, before the break, Robert tantalised us with his plans for the future.
He did.
Which is, as you said, you want to go back into the schools and help
back to the streets
you that you were,
yep.
who exists out there now,
yep.
who maybe can't see a future.
Yep.
How do you have you got a plan to put that into place? Is it just really early thoughts?
It's been in my mind for a few years now, for a good few years. I'm really just get my practices up and running, mm-hmm. and then I want to start NLP schools and hypnotherapy schools eventually, so I can put coaches who I train into my schools to teach the way I want.
Right.
And I have a few schools up and down the country, so I can get passive income as well. Obviously, I love doing my stage show work as well. But once they're up and running, I want to go back to the working class area of South London, Bermondsey, mm-hmm. Anywhere really, any working class areas, and try to set up like a charity-based practices
right.
for children to go into the schools and help with the schools. So if there's any schools listening, feels this could be helping, I'd love to come in and help dyslexia, anything you need help with, may just try something a little bit different and mm-hmm. just get a little message off from my website. But I'd love to go back and help them to see that they're and believe in themselves and to see that there is more out there, an option than just being what you believe. It's the actual believing in the belief in money. You know, people mm-hmm. have got negative belief behind money. If people speak posh, they're stuck up.
Sure.
There's all these negative beliefs when you come from a work class area, and it's a belief of not being able to get where these people are, to mm-hmm. be able to have your own dreams. Your dream can't go that far, you know. I know when I was a kid, all I wanted to be was like the other kids on the estate, was either, or from our way, was either a drug dealer or an armed robber or something. I mean, that's how stupid. I mean, mm-hmm. I really was. I was, look back now, and my mindset as a young man was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But I never had no other...
There's no role model or
no role model to look at. No,
for you.
No, I mean, yeah, but, so that's what I'd love to do. I want to help people. Grew up with some real clever guys and ended up on stupid paths.
Right.
Because they never had no option, no mm-hmm. vision to see that they could do something else with their talents, you know, they're very talented people.
What makes you want to do it with kids? Because, I mean, I do you have children?
With the kids, I have children, yeah.
Yeah.
Four boys. I want to do it with the children because before it's too late, obviously, before they do go too far and mm-hmm. think it's all nonsense, you know. Like you get a lot of kids a kid whose dad may be on heroin or something and the mum's an ex-skaggin and she's only worried about a bit of puff or getting a gyro to go on the booze with and things like this. This is the sort of areas I was brought up in. This is why I want to go back and help these children. It ain't the children's fault. They're going to, what chance have they got? You know, all going over their scumbag thieves and they had no chance from day one. You know what I mean? So unless you can get there at day one and sort of help them before... You know, because they're the sort of ones that will go far. If they can see that what their mum and dad's a skaghead, the mum's let them down, she's an alky. And if you can give them the education, say, well, you can do this. You can
break the cycle.
They can have someone to look up to. Yeah, and break that cycle. They're the sort of people that do genuinely achieve because they know what it's like to have it hard, you know, and they're going to want it. They're going to be hungry for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
They're going to be so hungry for it. And then it's getting them hungry for it. And they will achieve it, yeah.
Yeah. So we're aware earlier in the year we reported on the fact that mindfulness is being rolled out in schools. So now we're looking to roll out Robert's plan for NLP and hypnotherapy in schools.
Yeah.
So as you've said, if there's anybody listening that thinks they have an interest in this, if they think they've got a connection to a school that might be interested in this, please do get in touch. We'll be giving Robert's contact details out in a moment. But obviously you can always get in contact with us here at Who Cares Wins and we'll pass messages on.
What kind of age?
What sort of age? I don't care any age. I can work with kids of any age.
I mean, in terms of you setting up a something to support kids, would it be sort of like a junior school, senior school?
Junior school, senior school, yeah. Any age, yeah. That'd be fine. I can work with all kids of all ages.
Mm.
It's no problem. So we're dealing with the unconscious mind. I mean, I know my mum never taught me about how I was feeling and where's that feeling. There's a thing called submodalities in NLP, so... If you feel, let's think for instance, give me somewhere, something that makes you feel stressed in life. Have you got anything at the moment that makes you, you haven't got to tell me, just think of something that makes you feel stressed.
Yes, I can think of something.
Can you relate to, just try to close your eyes a minute and just think of when you felt stressed, where was that feeling in your body? Whereabouts is it?
It's here. So
there you go.
It's on your left side. Don't say here. My left shoulder.
It's on the left shoulder. There you go. See? So you can see that on a neurology says that there's a feeling there.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can move that feeling. Now, what would happen if I move that feeling down to the bottom of your stomach? Just see if you can move it down. Or is it a colour? Could you give that feeling a colour?
Now I feel sick.
You feel sick? Okay, move it back up to your chest then.
Okay.
You can play about with that feeling. Now, what colour is that feeling?
It's red.
Is it a circle, square? Could you give it a shot?
It's a circle.
Okay. Would you feel better changing that colour, first of all? Change the colour.
Yeah, it'd be easier if it was purple.
Yeah, okay. And how does that feel now? Purple.
It's soother. It's smooth. Okay.
How about we change the shape?
Yeah, circle's okay. I don't mind the circle.
Okay, well, now bring it down to the bottom of your stomach. How does it feel down there, right at the bottom of the pit?
That's much better than it was earlier.
Yeah, okay. And now start spinning it forward, over forward.
Okay.
And take it out of your body in front of you and spin it fast forward.
Right, okay.
How does that feel?
Fun.
There you go.
I've gone from stress to fun.
You can open your eyes.
When you were talking earlier on about the people who are susceptible and who aren't, I am that person, like sort of at the nth degree, because I was hypnotized by Paul McKenna years ago.
Yeah.
And it's easy for me. I'm just like, boom, I'm there.
But what we're doing there is hypnotherapy. Mm-hmm. NLP techniques, we're not actually doing into a deep trance or taking over. I'm not doing no sort of like stage hypnosis, if you want. This is just what they call submodalities. Now, when you deal with your feelings, which they found this out in the 70s, but they didn't know what was going on. Now, under brain scans, we can see why it works.
Mm.
If you find a feeling, identify the feeling, you move it, the shape, the colours, and you can change it about. And once you change this about, what happens is inside your mind, there's neuro pathways in patterns. So they're in patterns of, let's make it easy and black and white, they're in squares, for instance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you're worrying, that's what that shows up in the brain scan as yellow, red, and blue, whatever. So they can see the neuro pattern, yeah, when you're worrying. Now, when you start moving the colours, when you move the feeling around, change the colour, your unconscious mind has different associations. And what happens? The patterns start moving on the screen. They start seeing the patterns moving, which proves it has to change the way you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And once you change the way you feel, it's gone. Like, you've just gone from being worried into...
Fun.
Great.
That was easy.
Yeah. And that's what it is. That's because you're dealing with the unconscious mind. When you deal with the unconscious mind, you don't have to go about content. We all think, you know, because we have to learn about everything and there has to be a reason for everything, like a procedure. We have to think, we have to know it. We don't have to. You can change. Mm. You change something unconsciously, it's done.
Could Kerry then do that to herself when she got anxious?
Yeah.
Is that sort of like a pattern she could work through?
Easy, yeah. Definitely, 100%. Mm.
We'll test you on that.
100%.
On the way home.
Then you can anchor that state and I can go on. There's loads I could show you.
Yeah.
So is this the sort of thing that if somebody said earlier that you don't get as many people wanting to quit smoking as one might imagine?
No, but
same sort of pattern changing that you're thinking about?
Breaking a phobia would be different. That's more, I use a lot of images.
Right.
What I do is I get them into imagining they're in a cinema. Excuse me. So close your eyes, imagine you're in a cinema. First of all, I get them to think of three images or video clips, whatever they decide. Where did the event come from? So if someone's scared of heights, their dad may have rocked it on a big wheel when they were eight up the top and it scared the life out of them, yeah? So that's their earliest memory of the phobia. Don't mean it was the phobia, but as long as it's the earliest one they can remember, then I sort of associate a good time and a happy place before that. Same again after the event. A nice time in your life, or you could be on a beach in Mexico or whatever, you could be indoors reading a book, whatever. So what I do is I collapse these images together. I put some silly music on sometimes. I get imagining, I put little images in there. So I take them out of their self, first of all, because when people are scared of something, if it's a spider or a snake, if they're imagining it, you know, they can start, I've had women cry about snakes, and this woman in Portugal, she's never even seen a snake. She had a dream when she was a baby, it was in a cot with her. But she must have seen it on telly. Mm-hmm. It never even happened, but it horrified her.
Right.
So what I do is I get them to collapse these images and feelings, basically, to speed it up. I get them to dissociate themselves. So this is why they're in a cinema. So they're looking at the screen. But then I get them looking 4, 5, 6 down. So they're looking at themselves, looking at the screen.
Right.
And if they're still feeling uncomfortable, then I'll get them to imagine a clear perspex sheet in front of the screen, or even dissociate to looking at the self, looking at the self, looking at the screen, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll do this to the feet, to their feelings are gone, of the angst, the anxiety is gone, mm-hmm. and then I can start working on the change. Right. Then we collapse it. We use it in black and white because it's dissociated. Start bringing it into colour later on, putting some silly suggestions in there, mm-hmm. and we just collapse it. And so it takes a half hour.
Uh-huh. Half hour. I mean, that's just crazy, isn't it?
You live with it all your life. Yeah, and it's half like, an hour.
Yeah, you've got a phobia of, and your whole life has revolved around circumstances, situations to avoid this thing that never happened to you, but you believe it did.
Yeah.
Then you can change it in half an hour.
Maybe it took about an hour in the case with a snake. Yeah. It was a bit longer, but.
Now, you mentioned while we were in the music break that you, you've got an event coming up this Thursday.
Yeah, and Nanny's Kitchen in Blackfen. I'm doing a stage show there. I still love doing my stage shows. I've been brought up in the music industry and bands. I've always been on stage, so I like to put a bit of the onion eating, lose your belly button and all that sort of stuff. I enjoy it. That's my fun.
So this is the thing where people get worried.
Such a strong vision of my mum being hypnotised when I was a kid in Pontins, of losing her belly button and eating an onion.
Yep.
That's it.
Look at my website, you'll see bits and pieces on there.
So where again is
Nanny's Kitchen?
Yeah.
It's in Blackfen.
Where's Blackfen?
It's in Kent. It's not far from Sycup and the A2.
Right, okay. So it's in the evening. And is it tickets on the door?
Yep, 7 o'clock.
Okay. So we'll post about that on our Facebook, but it's on. Is it advertised on your own website as well?
Yes, it'll be on my website.
Yep. He's not sure.
I better check.
It's his first job when he leaves here today.
Yes, it will be.
So we'll give you details for Robert now. He's having a bit of a coughing fit, so we'll let him have a cough and clear his throat.
It's really dry.
But if you want to find out more about Robert, the website is www.thehypnotistman.com. It's got a Facebook page, and that's The Hypnotist Man, all one word again, and Twitter, hypnotist_man. And we'll be posting all of those on our website and our Facebook page, etc. And the Nanny's Kitchen event, we'll grab those details from you before you go. And we'll post about that. But thank you so much for coming on the show today.
We've made him talk through his cough,
so hopefully we've not made things worse.
And where are you based, Robert? Because
I'm based in Sycup.
I've
got a practice. I do most of my work from Sycup. I do some work in Arley Street. So mostly I practice from the Birkbeck Natural Health Clinic in Sycup.
Okay, we'll take that from you again in a moment and we'll post that.
Right. Okay.
We've got other events coming up, but we'll post those on Facebook as well. But just before we head off, acronym quiz.
Oh.
We're back on week 10.
We are, week 10 of 12.
Of 12.
And it is MBTI. So it's from week 40, who is Simon Drury. Okay. Which was on the 16th of December.
Okay, and Angela's mentioned it a few times as well. Mm-hmm. So that's number 10 out of 12. And next week, you've guessed it, drum roll, Angela's back. She's packing her bags as we speak. She's heading to the plane and she'll be back with us on Monday. And our guest on Monday is an associate of Angela's. I think they used to travel on the train together. It's where they first met when they were both commuting to the city. But it's Julie Taylor of Time to Shine. And Julie provides complementary therapies for emotional well-being. So Julie and Angela will be with us next Monday. I would just like this opportunity to say again, thank you very much, Robert, for your time today.
No, thank you very much.
And thank you to Kerry for supporting me over the past few weeks.
It's been great.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. And we're going to play out with a song choice of yours.
Mm-hmm.
It's Carly Simon, Let the River Run.
Thank you, Jen.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. And tune in next week, Monday, 3 o'clock, for Who Cares Wins, Angela Bryce Stevenson, Jan Mulligan, and our guest, Julie Taylor. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye, thank you.